From the KTOO newsroom, I'm Pablo Arauz Peña with your state and local news update. Juno is accepting applications for its Systemic Racism Review Committee to address longstanding issues related to race in the community. The Juno Assembly created the committee in August after protests and public listening sessions called for concrete action against systemic racism. The 7-person committee will review proposed laws and advise the Assembly if they include a policy or implication that is racist. It will also review ordinances and resolutions to see if they perpetuate racism. Seats on the committee are open to all community members who are 18 or older, but according to a press release from the city, they're looking for people who have experience identifying unlawful discrimination and inequity or have intimate knowledge of local and tribal cultures and practices. Assemblymember Lauren Jones says Juno residents with experience in social justice, human rights, or research at the university level are encouraged to apply. Applicants will receive a list of questions asking why they're a good fit for the role. The deadline to apply is Sunday, January 10th. And back around Christmas, there were reports of an earthquake and major mountain rock slide in the wilderness near Juno. But what came first, the earthquake or the slide? KTOO's Matt Miller tried to find out.
Jamie Tate is a helicopter pilot based out of British Columbia. The day after Christmas, he and his family were flying along the Taku River Valley after checking on a cabin in the area.
Well, it's pretty interesting because I've flown down that river for probably the better part of 35 years. I mean, I noticed it right away before the rest of my family did, and it's pretty significant.
One mountain along the river, about 46 miles northeast of Juneau, looked like part of its face had been sliced off.
The area in the valley was all full of the debris and mud that had been pushed up when the mountainside collapsed.
Sonia Nagorski, assistant professor of geology at the University of Alaska Southeast, says some of that area's mountain slopes are over 50 degrees, or the slopes are so steep that they're almost like a cliff face.
And so it just crumbles and fails. It's pretty astounding that those rocks are sitting at this steep angle at all.
Nagorski says there's a lot of volcanic rock that used to be under the Earth's surface. It's not as strong as other forms of rock, and it's more susceptible to weathering like rain, snow, and ice, combined with a lot of freezing and thawing.
It's easy to think that our mountains are solid and stable, but the Earth's surface is constantly shifting, especially when there are tectonic changes and glacial changes. A lot of changes can be quite sudden, and landsliding is the primary method of erosion in mountains steeper than about 30 to 40 degrees, which are plentiful here.
Nagorski says it's not clear exactly how much of the nearly 4,000-foot mountain actually flaked off and fell away on Christmas Eve. Her best estimate is 20 million cubic feet of material. That's enough to fill up half of the Houston Astrodome. When all that rock fell, it was literally enough to shake the earth. Natalia Rupert, a seismologist with the Alaska Earthquake Center, says if the shaking was caused by an earthquake, then it would have registered as a magnitude 2.8 or 2.9. Rupert is clear, however, the landslide itself was not triggered by any previous earthquake. She knows that because it's very easy for seismologists to distinguish a sudden, abrupt start of an earthquake from a landslide's gradual building intensity, sometimes over several minutes.
It starts very small, and then gradually the amplitude of the signal picks up, and it becomes larger and larger as the landslide mass kind of gains momentum and moves down the slope. And then it fades out as all those rocks come to a final resting place.
The Taku River is one of the biggest salmon-producing rivers in southeast Alaska. Since it crosses an international boundary, both United States and Canada share the harvest. David Harris, commercial fisheries area management biologist with the Alaska Department of Fish and Game, says the slide likely destroyed any salmon row at the foot of the mountain, but he believes it won't have a big impact on salmon runs overall.
The channel is fairly braided. There's two or three large channels already, plus smaller connecting side sloughs and whatnot. There's plenty of room for the water to find a way through. It's not like a narrow valley that's filled up with material.
Harris says much bigger landslides completely block the Taku and other places, but the river always finds a way to cut right through them. Pilot Jamie Tate warns Alaskans who have cabins or recreate along the Taku to watch out for lots of uprooted and dead trees to wash downriver in the spring. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Matt Miller.
Yesterday, anyone in the U.S. or Canada who pulled up a Google search would have seen the homepage logo replaced with an illustration of Elizabeth Paratrovich. In this story produced yesterday, KTO's Rasha McChesney explains how the Alaska Native civil rights activist ended up on Google's front page.
Google's latest doodle celebrates a woman who helped lead Alaskans to pass an anti-discrimination act that was the first of its kind in the nation, Elizabeth Paratrovich. Or Paratovich, people I spoke to for this story pronounced it both ways, was born into the Lukhachari clan of the Raven Moiety. And she was born into a time when organizations like the Alaska Native Brotherhood and Alaska Native Sisterhood were fighting to advance the civil rights of Alaska Native people. Because even though Alaska Natives and Native Americans had been granted citizenship in 1924, they were still struggling for equality. Today's doodle was designed, drawn, and painted by a Juneau-born Tlingit artist and illustrator, Michaela Chaitin Goad. She lives in Sitka now. She says she's still not sure how the Google Doodle team found her.
They emailed me out of the blue, maybe sometime in September or October, probably September.
She's glad they did, though keeping her project a secret for a few months was not easy, especially when she quizzed family members about their connection to Paratrovich. She and Paratrovich are related, though she had a hard time pinning down the exact link. She's related to the family who adopted Paratrovich after her parents died. If you haven't seen the doodle yet, you should go check it out. There are a lot of layers. Goad says this is typical of her art. She wants to pack it with symbols and meaning.
And for a piece like this, it was a little tricky because I had to keep in mind that it was hard to read well from a distance. You know, it could be pretty small in size, you know, on people's phones or on different small screens. So I couldn't get too detailed.
Paratrovich is standing at a podium. Behind her is a massive raven. He's got the words Google sketched along one wing and a four-lane head. He's holding the sun in his mouth. The piece is framed by trees and the ocean.
I knew I really wanted the illustration to be inspired by place and by a region here in Southeast Alaska, traditional homeland. And so that's what I wanted to incorporate, at least have some waves and forest imagery and just sort of honor the, you know, people of the tides. And then for the raven, I also wanted to honor Elizabeth's clan and her moiety, the raven clan. And so I knew I wanted to have raven imagery behind her. And if I could, work in some traditional form-line elements.
Goad says she was also inspired by one of the traditional raven creation stories when raven brings daylight to the world.
You know, Elizabeth was also a bringer of light. And I thought that would be a nice nod to that creation story.
It took her about a week to create the finished piece. She painted each different section, then scanned those into her computer and built a collage in Photoshop.
And then that way I could easily go back and change things or move things if I needed to based on the Google team's feedback.
The doodle went live in Alaska around 8 p.m. on Tuesday. December 30th is the 79th anniversary of the day Paratrovich and her husband wrote a letter to the governor of Alaska. They called attention to signs on the Douglas Inn, which read, "No Natives Allowed." They made comparisons to similar signs forbidding Jews from entering certain places in Germany, and how shocked many Americans were at that idea, though similar discrimination against Alaska Natives didn't seem to prompt the same outcry. Goad says she has gotten a nonstop stream of messages since the doodle posted.
It's so great. Like, I've gotten messages from people who are just saying that they feel so proud to be Tlingit or feel so proud to be Native today.
Representation matters, and Goad says she's happy to have a role in elevating Paratrovich's legacy.
It's really rewarding and affirming to work on projects like this and to know that people are feeling seen and people who often feel invisible are feeling validated in different ways. And it's a really great feeling.
Goad says Google paid her fairly for her time and work, and she was happy with the amount. The company is also donating $1.25 million to the National Congress of American Indians. According to Google, that funding will be used as cash grants and business training for Indigenous-owned small businesses in the U.S. that have been impacted by COVID-19. In Juneau, I'm Rasha McChesney.
And this is KTOO News.